Holy One, may we listen to you. And by listening, may we love. Amen. At the Baptist Theological Seminary, where Jason and I attended, one of the requirements for graduation is a mission immersion experience. You're required to spend at least 2 weeks in a different culture. During that 2 weeks, you spend a lot of time becoming immersed in the culture and learning about the people on a deeper level. This trip is designed to be much different than typical mission trips. Instead of going with the intention of doing and serving and taking Jesus to a foreign place, the purpose is to go and learn, and perhaps even to discover how Jesus is already present. So imagine this. About 15 years ago, 2002, a young, single, female, naive seminarian travels with a group of classmates to Cuba. In 2002, George W. Bush was our president, and Fidel Castro was still the leader of Cuba. While there were no impending threats against one another at the time, the relationship was still full of tension. Our image of freedom for the Cuban people was different than the image of freedom held by the Cuban government. And that very fact held a lot of tension, not just with the United States, but all around the world. It's true that the people of Cuba were not treated fairly or justly by their own government. It's also true that some of the tactics of other nations to get the Cuban government to change were not fair or acts of justice either. So there were strict travel bans to Cuba. The only way to get to Cuba was if you had a family connection or if you were granted a visa from a specific organization that had given permission. We were able to secure our visas through one of those organizations called the Alliance of Baptists. So, you can only imagine the uneasiness of my family when I told them I was going to Cuba. When we got to Cuba, which was not easy, because there were no direct flights from the United States to Cuba, so we bounced from Richmond to Miami to the Bahamas or Jamaica and then to Cuba. We were all over the place. We spent several days traveling and resting. We had a Cuban guide named Rita, who was a lovely woman, who showed us around during our 2 weeks. And we had a translator named Clem, who was a young father who had just finished his schooling and was preparing for his government-appointed position. As we stepped off the plane in Cuba, we felt like we had stepped back in time. The road was full of cars from the 1950s. And most of them were parked because the prices of gas were outrageous. It was like $4 and $5 a gallon. We spent our trip touring cigar factories and considering the workers' conditions. We visited medical facilities and considered health care. We visited and worshipped with natives and watched their purest praises. We visited government-run newspapers, and we discovered that they did have a freedom of speech, but it was much different than the freedom of speech that we experience. I quickly got over my dislike of beans, because every meal consisted of white rice and black beans. Because that was the ration. We spent hours watching Cuban films and visiting schools. We spent hours dancing and trying to salsa, but our American hips just would not move. We learned how each student was provided a college education by the government. And then, as payment for their education, they were appointed to a government position based on their education for 2 years. For example, our translator, Clem, had gone to school and had learned the English language and was going to be appointed to be a translator at the airport for 2 years. We learned how several generations of families lived together. The new generation would live upstairs, and the first generation would live downstairs. We spent hours listening to young people and asking questions about their life in Cuba. I can remember one of my classmates asking a young man this question: where would he like to go for vacation? And he giggled, looked at his friend and giggled some more. He responded, "The beach." That's funny because Cuba is surrounded by beach. And he looked at us and said, "Your understanding of vacation is only a dream for us. We can't travel like you do." By the end of 2 weeks, we have listened to a lot of people in Cuba. We didn't spend this trip working in the same sense that you may think of when you take a mission trip. On the contrary, our work was listening. And by the end of our trip, we had had some vulnerable conversations with some of the people we visited with. I remember confessing to one young person, "I was really afraid that you would hate us because we're American. I was afraid before coming." And the young person responded to me very honestly, "We don't hate Americans. You're very kind. We have trouble with some of the decisions made by your government, but you have listened. And you now know us. You now know our country. Maybe you can talk with some of the people in your government and share with them what you've learned." And that's what we did. When we came back, the group of us spent time writing letters to our representatives and sharing with them the things that we had experienced and learned from the people of Cuba. By the end of our trip, the people of Cuba that we had gotten to know began to trust us with their vulnerabilities. And that's because we came to listen. We didn't have an agenda. We were there to be God's love, and we did so through the act of listening. German-American theologian Paul Tillich speaks about this very act of listening as an act of love. Tillich was a chaplain during World War I and was a university lecturer afterwards until he was forbidden to lecture because of the way he spoke against Hitler in the Nazi regime. In his book, Love, Power, and Justice, Tillich says this: "In order to know what is just in a person-to-person encounter, love listens. In order to know what is just in a person-to-person encounter, love listens. It is its first task to listen. No human relation, especially no intimate one, is possible without mutual listening. Reproaches, reactions, defenses may be justified in terms of proportional justice, but perhaps they would prove to be unjust if there were more mutual listening. All things and all men, so to speak, call on us with small or loud voices. They They want us to listen. They want us to understand their intrinsic claims, their justice of being. They want justice from us. But we can give it to them only through the love which listens. We can give it to them only through the love which listens. I found relevance in that this week. Over the past few weeks, we've been exploring what it means for our church to offer welcome. We realize that for some folks, welcome feels different or looks different than it does for others. Our mission together is to serve Christ by embodying God's grace and love for all. So today we ask the question, how do we offer God's love for all? I suggest, as Tillich does, that showing love begins by listening. After all, God listens. Take our Old Testament lesson from today, Genesis 21, that Lee read for us. God listened to the prayers and cries of Sarah and sent her a son, Isaac. Isaac was blessed and was to be the father of the nations. And then there was Ishmael, also son of Abraham. Sarah insisted that Hagar and Ishmael be sent away. Imagine, Abraham wasn't happy about this because Ishmael was his son as well. It seems that Hagar and Ishmael are victims of jealousy and a human-designed plan, not a divine plan. God listened to the cries of Abraham and encouraged him to do as Sarah had requested. The Lord assured Abraham that Ishmael would be cared for. Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael away into the wilderness with bread and water. Now we know from other contexts in the Bible how unsettling this is. Here's Hagar, an unwed mother, a servant, without family, without home, sent into the wilderness of all places to make a way for her and her child alone. That's nearly impossible for a woman in this time. And as you've heard, and I've heard, and we've read about other wilderness journeys, we know the threats, the dangers, and the obstacles that await. So it's not surprising that Hagar and Ishmael run out of water and feel like they're left to die. And because she cannot stand to see her child wail to death, she places him under a bush and goes away from him to weep. And God listened. God heard the voice of Ishmael and sent an angel to Hagar, encouraging her to continue on. The Hebrew language is so beautiful. It's no coincidence that the name Ishmael means God will listen. God's all-encompassing love and compassion that covers human plans and human sins is shown to us through the power of listening. When Jason and I lived in the inner city of Charlotte, we had folks in need knocking on our doors at all hours of the night and day, and I literally mean all hours. We never knew who was on the other side of the door or what their visit may be about. Often, quite often, we were visited with folks who had lost their home or couldn't pay their bills. Sometimes they had been kicked out by a family member or their children had been taken from them. And they'd come to us for help. They'd start sharing their story. I remember one day in particular, I can't remember the face or the exact situations, but I remember a woman came in with her children, and she sat there. And as she began to share her story, I can remember becoming so overwhelmed by her needs. She had no home, no food for her children, no way to get to work, no one to take care of her kids when she got to work, and the list of problems kept getting bigger and bigger as I listened. My wheels started turning. What was I going to do? How was I going to help? What could I do for her? The questions kept coming. What was I going to do? But as I sat there and listened, without offering any answers, only being a place of support, I noticed that she began to talk herself into a circle and figure out exactly what she needed to do for herself. She realized she needed to go to a family member that she hadn't called yet and start there. It was because I was able to sit and listen and give her space to talk, she was able to find the answers within herself. How often do we as a church listen as God listens? Just a few weeks ago, Jason and I met with some friends from the seminary that had moved to this area. They found a church home, and they were so excited to be a part of that church. And then they recently left because no one was listening to their needs. No one heard they were alone. No one heard that they were overwhelmed with the addition of their fourth child. No one listened to their cries of distress. Friends, this story is so familiar to us, isn't it? I weep when I hear another story of someone that has been cast out or pushed out of the church by their own choosing or by the church. Jason and I share stories almost weekly with each other that we've encountered another couple or another individual who hasn't felt heard by the church. Hagar was cast out by Abraham and Sarah from her home, and the only thing that comforted her and gave her the strength to carry on was that someone listened. God listened. I ask you, do you feel like someone is listening to you? Being a part of this church, do you feel like you're in a place that will listen when you need us to? Take time to consider. This week, I've witnessed many of you showing love by listening to a need of a friend. Many of you have taken time to show love by calling or visiting shut-ins and offering your gift of listening. You listened when there was a need to talk, a need for food, a need for childcare, a need for a friend. Many of you have welcomed new faces into these doors by listening to their journeys. My prayer is that we can be a place that listens. And I challenge us to listen in new ways. Whether someone walks in these doors with a need, a celebration, or feeling broken, I pray we will listen. That when someone walks through our doors, whether they are new or have been a member for 80 years, we will listen. That we can offer compassion as God does through the simple gift of listening. For the people of Cuba, it meant hope to be heard. For Hagar, it meant life for her and her son, because God listened. For the church, It can mean a community of life and a place of grace. As Tillich suggests, we can practice justice and offer love through the art of listening. Because love listens.